Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Porto hosting with Hugh Neff, calling in from Delta Junction, Alaska, getting ready for a spring school tour. He, Nicole, and Walter are heading down south in a few days, and we're going to talk about that and also the Kobuk 440 and the finish to the recent racing season with Laughing Eyes Kennel. Hugh, how's it going?
Good morning. I almost called you Walter. Good morning, Robert. We're just pulling into Delta right as I speak. Beautiful day here. We're at the end of the Alaska Highway, pulling on to the Richardson, and I'm just going to pull over here and talk to you for a little bit. But, yeah, life is good. Had a little break in Tok for about a week or so, and now we're going to be hitting the road for the next month.
You do this school tour just about every year, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But before we do, just a couple of weeks ago, you had a pretty good finish at the Kobuk 440. I'm sure that was the last big race of the year. Tell us about that race and how did you do?
Oh, it was a great race, man. It's amazing to think that race, we have 20 hours of mandatory rest, and it's a 440-miler, and we basically did 440 miles in 2 days.
Wow.
It's always interesting going into a race knowing that you're not going to win it. For me, I'd like to win, but it's a crapshoot every year, and a lot of it has to do with just luck and fate and all that. But when you're racing against a guy like Jeff King, you're going into that race going, well, I don't think I'll be able to beat him because, you know, he's just got a phenomenal team right now. I used to think that Jeff should retire because, you know, he's already done so much and he's won more than anybody. But I can see why the guy keeps on racing because his dog team is just simply amazing. And just an honor to be out on the trail with guys like him and Tony Browning, who was running Aaron Burmeister's team that came in second. We came in third, had a great run, had about a third of the team were rookies who did quite well. And it's always nice having a team that knows where they're going, and I've had dogs that have done that race three or four times, so that was a bit of an advantage. But it was a nice rock hard trail with the wind at our back, so all the teams were flying, and I like to go out there and, you know, hang out with guys like John Baker and the Nelson family and folks like that, because for me that's really the heart of dog mushing is doing it with the natives.
You know, what I found interesting, Hugh, I don't know if you went to the banquet afterwards, but you were already home back in Wasilla area by the time last place finisher was coming in. So you really flew down that trail, didn't you?
Yeah, and, you know, there's some of the folks that are out there just doing it for fun, like my buddy Dempsey Woods, and they're what we call visiting and going to all the villages where they have friends at. What we're talking about, and hopefully it'll pan out one of these years, is I was talking with Sonny Linder about it and some other folks, would be to do a race from Fairbanks to Kotzebue, and we'd cut down the Yukon, and then at Huslia we'd head south and go to Shugnak. And there's a mountain pass there with the Huslia hot springs are in that area. And then I think that'd be a neat race to do. I think it'd be cool. You know, the Quest and Iditarod are awesome, but every couple of years it'd be nice to do some type of different event in Alaska or the Yukon where we're checking out some new areas.
Exactly. You know, we don't have enough races here in Alaska. Everybody's fighting to get into the few that we have. So anything would be better than nothing for sure. So coming in third in the Kobuk 440, that was the last race of the year, I'm sure. Did you do any short sprint races or anything like you normally do in that late spring heading into the school tour?
Oh, that was interesting. The week before the 440, I was actually racing in Tok at the Tok Race of Champions. You know, it's one of the top three sprint races. And Lance Mackey, my buddy, showed up, and it was fun to hang out with him for the weekend. We weren't really competing compared to the big boys of sprint racing, like Ken Chesick and, the Earharts and the Taylors and folks like that, the Streepers. We were just out there having fun. And just to say that I've participated in the you know, the world championship races in Toka will always be an honor that I'll always be able to look back on. And who knows, man, I saw Lance doing the Fur Ronde this year, and I know Jake's done it in the past, and Jeff. So maybe one of these years I'll try to do the race down in Anchorage, too, before the Iditarod.
So how do you prepare your dogs? I know it was just kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, but how do you amp them up to go, you know, as fast as they can on a sprint race versus going pretty slow compared to a sprint race on in the Kobuk 440 and races like that?
Yeah, Lord knows I'm no scientist, but there's, you know, obviously sprint racers have to train their dogs in a completely different manner. Their dogs are going all out for, 16 to 25 or 30 miles, and they'll do that at a, you know, pace that I thought I did great. I did 16 miles in 10 minutes, or in 1 hour, and I was more than 10 minutes behind the leaders, which doesn't seem like much in a long-distance race, but in a sprint race, that's like, you know, forever. So I initially started in Alaska working for sprint mushers like the Earhart family, Lester and Curtis, and folks like Gareth Wright and the Taylors, Greg and Ricky. And so that's sort of my first introduction to dog mushing. And there's sort of a little bit of a fun rivalry between sprinters and long distance, because a lot of people say that's why the Iditarod was started, because Joe Reddington wasn't fast enough to be a sprint musher. That's what a sprint musher will tell you. But as long-distance mushers, we look at it, obviously, in a completely different way, and we're out there exploring and want to see as much of Alaska as we can. So there's beauty in both sports, and that's why I enjoy doing both. And George Allen was there, and there's a reason alone to race, is just because, you know, the King of Kings was there, so that was pretty cool.
And it was just in your backyard, literally, right down the street from your home base there in Toke.
It's tough to switch over, though. Those, you know, the dogs of long distance, they want to chew a little bit of snow now and then on the side of the trail to get a little bit of hydration, and pretty much that's a big no-no. So stuff like that's going to slow you down.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there are obviously, the, even on a 25 or 3 mile sprint race, there's usually no snacking, there's no stopping. You're just pretty much putting the pedal to the metal and rocking and rolling, aren't you?
Yeah, and obviously I have to bring it up now, dude, because it wouldn't be right if I didn't. But unfortunately, during the race, a good buddy of mine had a heart attack and died. You know, after he had done the race, and then he was volunteering, shoveling snow on the highway for teams to cross, and it was the heat of the day. And unfortunately, Ted Agree passed away that day. So coming after what happened to me and Iditarod in my situation, it was definitely a pretty ironic scenario. And I dedicated the 440 to Ted. And guys like him are very underrated in Alaska. You don't see his name in the paper, and he's not some famous musher, but he's the guy that's big part of the community that's helping to volunteer and organize stuff and participate, and that's really what the spirit of mushing should be about.
You know, like you always say, live life to the fullest. You really never know when your last day is going to come, and I'm sure he's up there in heaven or wherever he believes, looking down on us and thinking, wow, what a life I had as a musher. It's one that a few can take part in, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was just an honor to know him, and he was just one of those guys that defined being happy and being a man for others. And, you know, used to be my neighbor, would come over and plow my driveway, and I wouldn't even ask the guy. He just goes, hey, bud, how you doing? I just got done doing your driveway. And that's how I met the guy initially when I moved to Toke. So people wonder why I live in Toke and not one of the bigger areas, and it's guys like him that are, you know, the type of Alaskans that I want to know as friends.
Exactly. So today, Hugh, you're pretty much starting your spring school tour. I know you're heading over to the vet to get Walter all checked out so he can fly on the plane, getting his health certificate and any shots that he needs. And then you're heading up to Fairbanks, and then you're home away from home down at your good buddy Dave Shear's place before you fly out on Sunday. What's happening this weekend? And then, of course, what's going on for the next month or so?
Oh, it's going to be one day's adventure is going to be completely different from the next, so it's going to be fun. Going to head up right now over to Clint Crusberg's at Delta Vet and get Walter's health certificate for the plane flight. Then I got my buddy Jesse Holmes' dog, Tobias, laying on my lap right now. I'm going to give him back to his proud pappy. Jesse, and then we're meeting some friends, you know, to hang out with. And Fairbanks going to stop in and say hi to my buddy Lance Mackey, who is always fun to hang out for a little while. And we've got a lot of memories that we could always laugh about on the trail together. Definitely missed not seeing him as much out there this year, and I hope to see him back as soon as possible. Then tomorrow we'll be heading south. Typical day, you know, on the road for 6 hours. Got to pick up a airline kennel for Robert over at Dave's, and then my buddy Hobo Jim's playing at the Loft tomorrow night, right there where the Iditarod starts on 4th Ave in Anchorage. So we're going to go visit with some Iditarod buddies and whoever else. And then Sunday, flying to Chicago with Nicole and Walter, and we'll be staying over at my buddy Pat Moon's in Chi-Town. And from there, we'll be up in Wisconsin, and from there to lots of shows in Chicago, hoping to catch a Cubbies game as well. You know, this is the 100th anniversary of Wrigley Field, so that'd be pretty cool to check out. I know they're playing the White Sox next week, which is always cool to see, like, a crosstown city rivalry. But this is a great time of year because I just get to share the joy of what I do with kids that are trying to figure out what they want out of this world, and try to spread a little bit of the passion I have for life with them, and instill in them the knowledge that it's not about winning, winning, winning. It's not about making tons of money. It's about finding something you love to do and sticking with it through thick and thin, and realizing that it's a roller coaster ride, and it ain't always going to be, you know, smiles and laughter. There's going to be some tough times too, but you just got to, you know, love what you do and spread that love to those that are around you. That's really all I've ever been trying to do.
And I understand a couple of weeks ago you had posted sort of a message you're going to try to promote this year on your school tour. What is that, and how are you going to present that?
How am I going to present that? We'll play that by ear. But, yeah, I'm going to talk a little bit to kids about how treating others with dignity and respect, and how to deal with bullies and people that might rip into you, whether it's to your face or over the internet. And I'm going to do it with knowledge. I'm not going to do it with vindictiveness or any ill will towards others. I'm going to try to educate. And you can't judge others without judging yourself first. So I'm going to be a bit open about myself as well, and, you know, things that I can improve on. But I don't want to be judgmental of others. I think that's probably one of the worst attributes a human can have, is what I call being holier than thou. And I think all of us need to take a step back when we're judging our neighbors and realize, you know what, they're just human like me, and sort of take a look at things from their view. And hopefully, if anything, the bullies are the ones that need the education more than those being bullied.
You know, that's a great topic, especially in today's day and age with the internet, and it's so easy just to type a line of text and hit send without a second thought. Of course, that can be very damaging, not only to our youth and to the students out there, but also to those folks just trying to do what they do every day, and then, you know, they receive those comments back and forth, and it can really damage a person pretty quickly with much regard on the other end. Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't really looked at much of the stuff after I did, or to tell you the truth, man. I'm not into the whole negative energy. If people want to rip into a guy who spent 11 hours on a sled and 40 or 50-degree winds just holding on for dear life, then, you know, that's their prerogative. But I'm just glad to be who I am, and glad my dogs are all doing well. And for me, that's really the key to success. It isn't what place you come in a race. It's the longevity of your dog's journey. And when I got a dog like Walter that's done 12,000 milers, or Maestro, or, you know, Oscar, or any of my older gentlemen or ladies like Jim Murray, who unfortunately passed away earlier this year, you know, lived to be 18 years old, that to me defines what being a true dog man is all about. It's about the respect for the animal, and hopefully people can see that when they see pictures of my dogs, and they got the big smiles on their faces. I don't really care what people say about me, but when they judge me and my love of my dogs, then I know something's seriously wrong with their view on life and not mine.
So when you do these school tours, Hugh, I know you've mentioned this before, but maybe for some new listeners, what is the age group that you try to target? Is it younger kids or is it high schoolers and up?
It's typically, you know, fourth through eighth grade, but I've talked to high schoolers. I've talked to military. I've done engineering conventions. You know me, Robert. I'll talk to anybody as long as it's about something I love talking about, or else most of the time you're going to find me as a hermit out in the woods, you know, doing my thing with the dogs. But generally speaking, a lot of what I'm just trying to pass on is, you know, metaphorically speaking, comparing dogs to humans and trying to bring out the best in both. But primarily on my school tour, obviously, I'm going to be talking to, you know, kids in grade schools and a few high schools here and there. Some of these schools I've been going to for over 10 years now, and we've got some newer ones as well. And, you know, we're going to be promoting not only dog mushing, but the thirst for knowledge and for wanting to learn. Because a lot of people, you know, you see so many bored people nowadays that are sitting there either watching somebody else do something on TV or playing video games. And I'm always trying to preach to the kids that your life can be a video game if you get outdoors and enjoy this beautiful world that we've been blessed to be put upon.
And, of course, those school tours have a lasting impact. I don't know how many times I've heard folks say that, you know, they studied the Iditarod or whatever in school, and now they packed their bags and moved to Alaska, and here they are as mushers. So even reaching that critical time at, you know, like you said, fourth to eighth graders, that can really have an impact on their journey in life, can't it?
Oh, big time. And a lot of the teachers, I think, learn a lesson or two as well. And especially with the book coming out this year and having that available, I have a lot of good stories in there from the trail and animal encounters and stuff like that. But a lot of my book is focused on teamwork, you know, overcoming obstacles and just learning about life and learning to grow through any obstacles that you deal with along the way. That's what I'm really trying to push with the Gypsy Musher book, is just how to be you and enjoy what you do.
So on this show, Hugh, we always say it's all about the dogs. I know that you're taking Walter down with you on your school tour. Introduce some new fans to Walter. What is he all about? I know you mentioned that he has quite a few miles under his belt, or under his paws, so to speak. What's so special about Walter, and why are you bringing him along this time?
Well, this is Walter's little retirement victory ceremony, and I haven't brought a dog in years, and Walter's a dog that is really good with humans. He actually likes to herd them whenever we're around tourists. And, you know, he's done 12,000-mile races. I was talking with Sonny Leonard about it, and he's like, yeah, I don't see another dog coming close to running that many 1,000-milers just because not too many people have done, you know, the Quest and Iditarod in the same year as we did for 8 years in a row, as well as this year. So Walter's just a very he's got a lot of human type of traits, and when I'm talking with him and hanging out with him, I don't really think of him even as a dog. You know, he's just like hanging out with your buddy. And named him after Walter Payton, of course. And we might actually talk to Tim Akimoff, who's a producer of WBZ, a public radio in Chicago, and he's trying to set up a deal where I'm going to be talking at Walter Payton High School in Chicago while I'm in town in May. So that would be really neat if I could do that. But, you know, Walter's a special boy, and I say he's retired, but you never know. He might do some mid-distance races with Nicole, or who knows, but he's still got some good running years in him. He's only 9 years old.
So you mentioned 12,000 milers, Hugh, 12,000-mile races. How many miles do you think old Walter has ran in his years? I know I tabulated that one time on one of my dogs not too long ago and found out he'd ran about 7,000 miles since I've had her, just in training and races and things. What do you think, Walter? How many miles do you think he has?
Just a guesstimate, you know, an average of 2,000 miles of training besides the racing every year. So say basically maybe 4,000 miles on average. He's 9 years old. So you're talking at least 35,000 miles, which just,
wow, huh?
You know, we're just, and people don't understand, we're not talking miles on highways or walking down the sidewalk. These are bush miles going over mountains and down rivers and some serious miles, you know. So I think we proved over time that the more dogs run, it doesn't wear them out or tire them out. It actually makes them stronger and tougher. And that's, I think, the beauty of modern-day dog mushing right now is, especially after a year like this in the Iditarod, people are realizing that the dogs did pretty darn good in the race. It's the humans that, you know, got licked pretty tough by Mother Nature. So these dogs of the North are just amazing creatures.
You know, it's also a testament on how well the sled dog is bred. When you think of a dog with 35,000 miles on him, think about the average pet dog and how much time they spend at the vet and getting injured, whether it be, you know, like knee problems or elbow problems and things like that. But a sled dog, obviously bred to pull, bred to do what it's done. What do you think is, besides breeding, why do you think that they're so much hardier than your average pet? And, you know, you're at a vet's office right now. You see a lot of dogs coming and going. Why do you think there's such a difference between the two breeds?
Yeah, I love bringing Walter or any of our dogs over to Dr. Kreuzberg's because he just looks at them and they're like, man, that's a beautiful dog. And I remember Bruce, one of the vets in the Iditarod, who was going over my dogs in Elam, looked at my 2 leaders, Jewel and George, brother and sister, and he just got this big smile on his face, and he goes, man, now that's what a leader's supposed to look and feel and, you know, what his body development's supposed to be like, because they're just rock-hard, you know, beasts, and a lot of it's just the energy these dogs feel off of one another. That's why we tend to run our teams are families of dogs. Day-to-day training and exercise. If you ever watch a sled dog, they love to stretch. And the only time I feel a little bit achy is when I'm sitting at a chair in front of the computer all day or something like that type of scenario. I think the more you just don't have to go forever and go for a huge walk, but like Nicole did a 10-mile hike the other day, and she feels great because the body was made to move. That's why we have 2 legs, and that's why during these tours, if we're not talking at a school and we have a little bit of free time, we're going to be out in the woods doing some hiking, because I think it's really good for the body, and I think a healthy body develops a healthy mind, and that's really what it's all about.
You had mentioned, one more question about Walter, Hugh. You had mentioned that at 9 years old, he's about ready to retire, and I'm sure a lot of pet dog fans that are listening think, wow, he's still pretty young. Why would he need to stop now? But for nine years old for a sled dog, that is getting up there in years in terms of being able to keep up the pace with the big teams and that sort of thing. What do you go in terms
exactly.
of picking when you're going to retire? How do you choose that besides age?
Yeah, that is so tough, dude. Like, I really wanted to bring him on the 440 and, you know, going back and forth on it, and then I just realized he couldn't keep the pace, and that's a big issue. You got to realize we're doing like 11 or 12 miles an hour for 440 miles, which pretty much blows my mind to think about how fast a race it was this year. And that's why I love doing the 440, and I'm really surprised more mushers aren't doing that race every year, except the only other musher I know that does it on a yearly basis, like myself, that travels to Costa Buse, probably Ken Anderson. But Walter, believe me, he could do racing. That's no problem. But for the, you know, being up with the big boys and being competitive, he wouldn't be able to keep the pace. You know, their body sort of thickens up, and, you know, it's like a 38-year-old basketball player playing against a kid straight out of college. He ain't going to be able to keep the pace for the whole game, typically. So,
well, you know, Herschel Walker said yesterday
he
can still play at 52 in the NFL. So I don't know about retiring early. Like you said, the body thickens up and slows down. And he's, like you said, Walter could probably still do very well in the mid-distance races. And I'm sure he'll be out there doing his thing. I don't know if it'll be at the Race of Champions, as you mentioned, in Tok, but he's still got a lot of running with him, doesn't he?
Oh, big time. And for training, and, you know, we do tourism here and again as well. So by no means is he done running. Believe me, he wouldn't allow that. In fact, you know, dogs like him and Delilah, and a few others, you know, we let them, as we're hooking up the team, we'll let them loose from their house, and they run up, and they go right to the lead position, and they sit down, and they go, I'm ready. So those are the beautiful leaders, the ones that are just born to be leaders, and Walter's one of those special dogs. But I have such a fine dog yard this year that this year was a transitional year. People were blown away that I was doing so competitively with only eight dogs in Iditarod, but they had to know that going into that race, that's what I expected, because I knew a lot of the younger dogs weren't going to be able to go too far. So I learned that from John Schendelmeyer. Sometimes you just want to run the dog for 200 or 300 miles, and guys like the Smith brothers taught me this, Ramey and Sim, that you can go just as fast with a nice, solid 8-10 dog team. And we proved that, of course, until Golovin. It's on a fast trail. It doesn't really behoove you to have too huge of a team. It's better to have a nice, solid team that's going to work together as one.
And you did the same thing in the Quest. I think you finished with eight dogs in that race too, didn't you?
Yeah, but they got to realize I got a yard full of 32-year-olds. And thankfully this summer, John, who's been helping us out all winter, is going to be going down with 20 pups that are in the 2 to 3 year old age range, and he's going to be working for Alaska Excursions in Dyea, where I used to work, giving tourism rides, and that's going to really thicken those dogs up for next fall for racing next year. So we're going to have a really solid year next year, I believe. And I don't know if you can hear the winds here in Delta Junction, man, but it's blowing hard.
It's probably the windiest area
besides the coast of Alaska.
It's coming through there on the phone. Hugh, we have a couple of minutes left. I know you wanted to mention what else is happening this summer. What else is going on? About 2.5 minutes to go.
As my German friends know, we'll be looking forward to seeing you all in September. The tour is going to be expanding this year to the Netherlands, France, and possibly part of the UK. And there's an outside chance, if things come together, that we might be visiting a German friend of ours who lives in Cape Town, South Africa, as part of the tour. Her name's Barbara, and she, along with my buddy Sui Kings and Peter Camper and a bunch of German folks, made a beautiful movie called Hugh Neff and the Yukon Quest that was just translated into English. You can actually get it now in the English version. And I'm sure my buddy Alan Moore would love to get a copy, because it's about him winning the race last year. And they did a really amazing job on this video, and it's a great play-by-play of the Quest from 2 years ago. So that's why I'm still smiling, man, and as happy as ever. I had a tough road on the Iditarod, and, you know, it's one of those deals that I'll have to always have in the back of my mind. You know, but realistically, I had an amazing year. I did fine in the Quest, did great in the 440. I had a movie made about me in Norway as well as Germany, and, you know, I finally got the book finished, so life is good. And as I always say, if people are ever in the Tok area and they're looking forward to seeing, you know, the real Alaskana, they're more than welcome to stop by the visitor center, pick up one of our brochures, and usually somebody's around the kennel and they can come visit, you know, one of the best racing teams in Alaska. And
you're
we might even be expanding this summer and doing some dog tours with one of the hotels in Fairbanks, too. So I'll keep you
very
up to date on that when I find out.
And for folks visiting Tok, it's a big thoroughfare for folks coming over in from Canada. Right off the road there, just a few miles from the main town of Tok, or main community, I guess it would be called. Hugh, we're just about out of time. We'll talk again soon when you get back, okay?
All right, Robert. You have a good month of May, and I'm going to go see if they still have snow down in the lower 48.
There you go. Hugh Neff, the Gypsy Musher, hughneffgypsymusher.com is his website. You can pick up his book right there. Make sure you follow him on Facebook as well. Just search for Hugh Neff or the Gypsy Musher, and you'll find his page. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.